Hey there, podcast listeners. This is Justin with BeyondTheUniform.io, where my goal is to give military veterans the tools they need to be successful in their civilian career. My guest today is Vic Perez.
People always say that I was going to see a giant pay cut when I got out of the military, and I was like, no, there's no way. I'm going to go into Wall Street. There's no pay cut. There is a pay cut. You're going to start off, I mean, you have no experience in finance. I took an analyst role. Normally, for someone with an MBA, they would have to take an associate role. But trading is more like an apprenticeship. You have to learn how to do it. So I took the analyst role kind of to get my feet wet. And I took a significant pay cut. And now you're paying taxes and stuff like that. You're paying for your own health care. It adds up. Yeah, that was an eye-opener.
So I got to be honest, I knew very little before this interview about, in the world of finance, the trading functional role. I do want to note that we are talking about trading and traders. I know oftentimes it sounds like traitors, and I kept on thinking Benedict Arnold, but we are not talking about that. We are talking about people on Wall Street who are in that high-pressure sales environment, buying and selling different stocks or commodities or items. Vic does a really, really, really incredible job of breaking down what it's like to be a trader, what the day-to-day life is like, what skills you need, the advantages of doing this, and how it fits into the finance world in general. So here is my interview with Vic. All right. Well, my guest today is Vic Perez. Really excited to connect with Vic. He graduated from the Naval Academy with a BS in economics with merit. He served in the Navy for 6 years, first as an officer on board the nuclear submarine, the USS Cheyenne, underneath Captain Noel Gonzalez, who's also been a guest on the show, and after that as an instructor at Notre Dame. And while at Notre Dame, Vic somehow found the time to earn his MBA from the University Chicago Booth School of Business with an emphasis on finance. And not only did he do that while teaching at Notre Dame, he did it in just 2 years instead of the traditional 3 years. Vic now works in the financial services industry with Wells Fargo. He's part of their new veteran internship program, which we'll dive into in the interview. And his current role is as a credit derivative swap trading analyst. So, Vic, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Justin.
So Vic, to kick things off, I'd love to learn about at what point you decided to leave the military and how you approached that decision.
I think my 2 years while I was in shore tour at Notre Dame, I was considering whether I wanted to get out or stay in. I mean, I love submarine and I really wanted to stay in, but at the same time, I was engaged at the time and I was thinking about getting out for the sole purpose of being able to be with my family, raising kids and stuff like that. And to be honest, I was going back and forth every day. One day I would walk into my captain's office, Captain Mike Ryan, and I'd be like, hey, sir, I'm staying in the Navy. Get the papers for me. I'm signing. And then the next day I'd come back and I'd be like, never mind, sir. I'm not sure about this. And I did that for a few months. And eventually December of last year, which is about, I mean, it's 9 months ago, I was like, hey, sir, I made my decision. I'm getting out. And I went through with it. So I think I'm a special circumstance in that that I was able to make it happen so fast. I don't think normally you do that 5 months out. Normally it's supposed to be a year out.
Man, and as you made that decision, how did you think about the reserves? Did you decide to join the reserves, or how did you evaluate that?
Absolutely. Given that I love the military and love the Navy, I was like, well, I probably should not just cut myself off cold turkey. I was like, let me wean myself off by at least being a reservist. So I'm currently in the process of joining the reserve unit here in Charlotte.
That's great. And I guess in general, how have you found companies to be with the reserves? I know you haven't really started that yet, but do you have a sense for how Wells Fargo or a typical company works with you as part of the reserves?
As far as Wells Fargo goes, it's very easy. I spoke to my boss. I was like, hey, you know, I intend to go into the reserves. I'm going to be required to do 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year. And he got me more information, put me in touch with the human resource department. And they were like, yeah, it's a paid time off. You just say you're going to go to the reserves and you go. And they know that I'm gone for those days. Usually since I'm a trader, I don't trade on the weekend. So therefore there's no conflict with weekend reserve duty. The 2 weeks that I'll be off over the summer, I'll just make sure I plan ahead with my with my desk, and everyone knows that I'll be gone so they could cover for me. But honestly, with Wells Fargo, not an issue. They're very friendly.
That's great. That's great. And in retrospect, as you look at that transition a year or so ago, what was the most surprising aspect of the transition to civilian life? Or what do you now know that you didn't know to expect a year ago?
People always say that, or they always told me rather, that I was going to see a giant pay cut when I got out of the military. And I was like, no, there's no way. I'm going to Wall Street. There's no pay cut. There is a pay cut. You're going to start off, I mean, you have no experience in finance. At least in my case, I have no experience in finance. And I took an analyst role. Normally for someone with an MBA, they would have to take an associate role. But trading is more like an apprenticeship. You have to learn how to do it. So I took the analyst role kind of to get my feet wet. And I took a significant pay cut. And now you're paying taxes and stuff like that. You're paying for your own health care. It adds up. But yeah, that was an eye-opener.
Yeah, that definitely seems like a trend where, you know, there's one aspect which it seems like is having to oftentimes roll up your sleeves and take a slightly more junior role and prove yourself and learn a skill to get back to that same pay level. And like you touched on that other component of all the different taxes and things that you need to deal with on the outside that you might not even consider as part of your active duty pay, but then you realize on the other side, like, oh man, I'm having to pay for all these other things, and those expenses really add up in a way that some people don't anticipate.
Very quickly, but yes, I agree.
And I'd love to learn about your time at Booth. And so for listeners on active duty who might not be familiar with the grad school world, Chicago Booth School of Business is consistently in the top-ranked business schools. They're extremely well-known for their finance program and considered to be one of the best in the world for those looking to go into finance. How did you think about doing grad school while on your shore tour? Because I imagine that was a pretty chaotic time for you to be juggling both.
So one of the things that I told the detailer when I went to Notre Dame, or prior to getting orders to my shore tour, was that I really wanted to get a graduate degree. At that time, I was considering staying in the Navy, and I knew that if I was going to go on to be XO or CO one day, I was going to have a grad degree. So they were very helpful. They tried finding me something that I could possibly get my grad degree while working there, and Notre Dame had an opening for a military instructor, and the thought was that I was going to go to Notre Dame and both teach and be a student at Notre Dame. Once I got my orders, I was like, well, I'm just going to apply to other schools in the area. I kind of did like a 200-mile radius around Notre Dame. Chicago was in within that circle, so I applied to Kellogg and Booth as well. Honestly, I had no idea about the rankings or anything like that. It was just by chance that I applied to these schools. All three of those schools are very good schools. Booth accepted me. Notre Dame and Kellogg, they weren't very, very open to having me. Notre Dame was like, well, you haven't taken the GMAT. Your application is late. Kellogg was like, well, you can't start this year. You have to start next year and we'll take you then. And I wanted to start then and there, and Chicago accepted me. So that's where I went.
And did you know before, did you know before applying to business school that you wanted to go into finance?
I think I've always been inclined to business. My father has six auto shops in Miami, and he has a real estate business. So I've always been inclined or leaning towards business. I didn't really know that I wanted to go into finance. Once I got to Booth and I found out that it was well known for its finance, I mean, the father of modern finance, Eugene Fama, teaches at Booth. I was like, well, there's no way I'm going to come to this school, graduate, and not study finance. And then while there, I had friends that were at Goldman Sachs, BlackRock, major consulting firms, McKinsey, BCG. And talking to those guys, that's when I started to learn that, hey, you know, this is something that kind of interests me.
That's great. And if someone is listening and they're thinking of applying to business school or specifically to Booth, what advice would you have for them about the application process?
definitely do your research, both for the school, the courses that they have, what's special about the school. Look at fit. How well do you fit into that school's culture? I think that one of the greatest things about Booth is that they're very open. They're very accepting. There's a huge entrepreneurial spirit at the school. I really felt welcome there. I loved going to school every weekend. It was just like a happy place. It didn't feel like a drag having to go to school. With the exception of traveling to school, I hated the travel. But the once I got to school, I was always happy. So I think school is important. Look at the admissions requirements. Understand them. Like I said, I didn't get into Mendoza, which is Notre Dame, or Kellogg because I didn't meet the admissions deadlines, partly because of the cycle that I was on with my orders. But had I known or been able to plan for that, that would have been very helpful.
And actually, what was that like? I'm just wondering. I'm just trying to picture what was your day-to-day life, or I guess maybe week-to-week life while you were at Notre Dame? Because you were saying on the weekends, so I'm imagining Friday you pack up your car, you drive over, you spend the weekends over in Chicago. What was that like, juggling both shore tour and a full-time education?
So the weekend program through Booth is all-day Saturday classes, so Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon. But like you said, it's a three-and-a-half-year program or three-year program, and I wanted to compress it into two. What I liked about Booth was they provided me the option of taking classes at night and full-time classes if I wanted to. Obviously, during the school year when I was teaching classes, it was very hard for me to take a Tuesday afternoon class in Chicago when I'm in South Bend, Indiana. But over the summer, I would go full-time. I would go all day Friday, all day Saturday. So I would take a Friday afternoon class, Friday night class, morning Saturday, and afternoon Saturday, kind of knock out some of my quarters early. Then I transitioned from the Navy. I started the Veteran Internship Program here in Charlotte, and I was still not done with Booth. I had a couple weeks left. So I was flying to Chicago on the weekends to make that happen.
Man, it's that must have been intense, man. But it's, you know, it pays off being able to crank out most of that program while you're on active duty. I mean, it saved a ton of money in terms of opportunity cost of compressing those two together. So I imagine it's great now being on the other side, but I can't imagine how crazy and just busy that was while you're in the midst of it.
Well, the beautiful thing about the weekend program is everyone travels. People come in from Miami, from Mexico, from California, from Washington, from Texas. So everyone meets at the airport. We all catch the shuttle. The school provides a shuttle for us, a very nice, like, fancy shuttle. And they shuttle us to school right before classes start. So you actually build a community of weekend travelers, everyone that's already in industry. Like I said, all my friends work in these major firms that people are trying to get into. So it was a good experience.
And what did you like most and least about your time at Booth?
Least was the traveling. It honestly got very tiring. Sundays weren't rest days. You know, I traveled back Saturday night, and then Sunday would be catch up on homework or get ahead on homework. So I never really got to rest. What did I like most? The friends that I made. I honestly didn't expect that I was going to make that many friends, and, you know, friends for life. Couple of the guys from Booth I'm getting married in on October 8th, and a couple of the groomsmen are friends from Booth. A lot of the people coming to my wedding are from Booth, and again, they're traveling from across the country to attend my wedding. The people really made it special.
That's great. Yeah, it's I think one of the advantages of these business school programs is the structure does lend itself to creating really strong friends and connections. And of course, that's valuable in a professional sense of having people you're close to be able to call on for advice and for intros and things like that. But on the personal side of creating just that very valuable friends group is really, really great, especially transitioning from the military, where in a lot of ways you're leaving a lot of those strong connections that you have with a wardroom or with a ship or with people that are close geographically to you.
Yes.
And I wanted to talk about Wells Fargo. And before we dive into that, so you went through an MBA program that focused on finance to get into the world of finance. And I'm just wondering, now that you're on the other side, now that you're in the finance industry, what are some other paths that you see people taking to get to your role right now? And that could be specific grad school programs or backgrounds, but I'd love to give listeners a view of different routes they could take if they want to end up in this sort of world.
Well, I think there's a couple points to make there. I think the MBA is not necessary to be a trader. So a trader, like I said earlier, is more like a trade skill, right? It's an apprenticeship you learn by doing. And a lot of the guys that I work with don't even have an MBA. You know, they came straight out of undergrad. They went through an internship program. They got hired on full time. And they'll spend the rest of their lives or their careers just trading. You know, somewhere along the way, they'll get their CFA. But other than that, there's really no other education requirement for this. People with MBAs tend to be investment banking associates. So that's more the people that value companies, work on mergers and acquisitions, leverage finance projects, stuff like that. I was more interested in the trading aspect of it, so I think it fits my lifestyle more. The investment banking lifestyle is more of a work around the clock. I think it's just a different lifestyle. I think the products are very cool, but at the same time, if I got out of the military because I wanted to be able to be a dad, I think that trading, which is more market hours, free on the weekends, fit my desires more. As far as things that you could do to prepare yourself for going into business, I think reading books and reading the newspaper is very important. I mean, books that I've read, I've been, you know, Liar's Poker by Michael Lewis, When Genius Failed by, I think it's Roger Lewinstein, Too Big to Fail. Read the Wall Street Journal every day. There's a website, it's called The Morning Brew. You can subscribe to their daily email, which gives you market news every day. I also did a prep program called HBX Core. It's through Harvard Business School. I was in the middle of my MBA, and I just wanted to get more practice in accounting, and that turned out to be a very good program. So there's a lot of things you can do to prepare yourself. I think the most important thing you need to do is do a lot of research and understand the differences between all the jobs. Trading is nothing like being an investment banker, although you work at an investment bank, and you're technically an investment banker, it's not the same role.
Mm. I'd love to dive into that more. So let's start with trading. How would you explain to someone on active duty, what is a trader? What do they do? What's their life look like? Help them explain what that role is.
So a trader is someone who merely buys and sells a security on the market, right? You could be a buy-side trader. You could be a sell-side trader. Sell-side traders are the major banks, right? The Wells Fargo's, the Goldman Sachs, the JP Morgan's. They're the sell-side traders. The buy-side is our hedge funds, institutional buyers, asset management firms. They're buying the securities from us. We provide liquidity. In other words, if they want to buy something, we'll sell it to them if we have it. If they want to sell it to us, we'll buy it from them just to provide them that exit. As far as the lifestyle, for an analyst, which is like the junior most rank in trading, I get to work by 6 a.m. in the morning. I run a couple of reports by 7 a.m. That's when my bosses start coming in, right? I want to have the reports ready for them. 7:30, we have a morning meeting. We kind of talk about what the market's doing, what our strategy is for the day, what our current positions are, how do we want to protect ourselves, and how are we going to invest the bank's money at that time, that day. And then the rest of the day, you know, when we get back to our desk, we just start trading immediately. People start calling us. You start doing things via chat. A lot of this business is done via chat, which blew my mind. I did not expect that. Do that till about 4, 4:30. Then run reports again till about 5:30. Just close the books at the end of the day and then go home. The beautiful thing about being a trader is when you go home, you go home. You know, you're not going to get called back because the market's closed. It's nice.
And this is great. I'm really appreciating the specificity you're giving in this breakdown. I think that's super helpful. And so to dive into a couple of things you said, you talked about that 7:30 group up with your team, and you talked about going over your positions. What do you mean by that? Like what is a position, and what are you guys talking about with that?
So a position is what you currently own and what you want to buy. So let's say, you know, I hold X million stocks of, or say thousands, X thousand stocks of Apple and X thousand stocks of Twitter, you know, and then we think that Twitter has some bad news coming or something like that. No offense on Twitter. I'm just making some random examples here. We'll say, well, we probably don't want to own these if we expect the prices to go down. So today we want to sell these. Our goal is to sell these. If someone wants to buy them, sell it, you know. So that's what we talk about.
And I'm assuming you're going into like a level of what we think this is worth. So we would sell it as low as this, and we would buy as high. I mean, you're getting into like the specific assumptions around what the stock is worth.
We are talking pennies. That's how specific we get.
And I think this goes back to, you know, it sounds like a lot of your advice about getting into this was around a lot of research, around reading books and reading the Wall Street Journal and reading all these different sources. And I'm guessing that plays a very big role in your world, which is accumulating a lot of information and then developing theories about businesses and the world and large economic trends and what certain events in the world will mean for different companies. Am I right on that?
The most important thing in this business is having information and having an opinion backed on some analysis that you did. Like today, for instance, just 2 days ago, I asked one of my directors for feedback. I was like, hey, you know, I've been here a few months now. How am I doing? Very positive feedback. And I was like, well, what can I do to improve? He's like, you know what? I recommend you get a Twitter account and follow some major investors and learn from them and what they're tweeting and kind of develop your own big picture of what's going on. That's going to help you develop yourself and your strategy. And so lo and behold, today I'm there at work in my little Twitter feed. I'm reading everything that I can from all these other investors. And I learned a lot today just from doing that. So I think, to your point, yes, you want to be a wealth of knowledge. You want to read as much as you can. You want to have an understanding of how things impact other things. I mean, today the news is, you know, the Mexican peso is being used as a barometer for presidential candidate Trump. It's crazy, right? But people see it that way. When he does well, the peso goes down. When he does bad, it goes up. So little things like that. And the only way you're going to get that is by reading.
Man. And, Let me skip ahead here, just since you mentioned that. So it sounds like if I'm a veteran and I love consuming information and then really synthesizing that into hypotheses, that might be an indication that I might like life as a trader. And I'm wondering, what are other signs, especially if someone's on active duty listening to this, what are some signs that someone may really like life in the world of trading and signs that I might not be cut out for this sort of work?
I think someone that tracks the market closely, they personally have their own investment account and they invest their own money. Probably someone that's good with numbers and someone that enjoys working under pressure. I mean, pressure is there. First time you book a $50 million trade and then you see that it starts going down and you're losing money, it kind of puts some pressure on you. You're like, oh my God, am I going to have a job after this? Right? But you hope that you made that right decision and that eventually it will bounce back to, you know, to what you originally thought. So I think those are some key things, some key attributes that would be good indicators that you're good for this job. What will be a sign that you're not good for this job? I don't know. I think if you don't like investments, you generally don't like reading market news, you don't care for investments, or you're not good with numbers, is probably not for you. I mean, it's numbers all day. You're reading all day. You're really tied to your desk. If you think that you're going to step away and have a 20-minute lunch, you're not. You know, lunch, you get whatever sprouts to your desk, and you eat right there at your desk because you're training through lunch.
I'm like, my
there's
heart,
no flexibility there.
My heart is just accelerating hearing you describe this in a way that makes me know this would not be the job for me. I mean, do you?
But it's fun. I mean, it's something that.
Oh, I can totally see that. Yeah.
I enjoy, right? It's,
yeah.
If you enjoy it, you're going to be great for it. I enjoy having whatever random lunch is brought to me that day. That's what I'm eating. I enjoy looking at the numbers and see what's going on. I love seeing the patterns, how, you know, come 9:30 market open, there's a huge rush of investors. Come lunchtime, it dies down. Like, you see the buy side investors, they're going to lunch and they don't want to buy during that time. And then come 1:30, 2 o'clock, all of a sudden there's another rush of trades coming. It's cool.
I mean, it seems like you're, you know, I'm obviously oversimplifying and misrepresenting this, but it almost seems like you're in a Vegas casino playing an educated game with massive chips. I mean, you have like so much money, but it's that same exhilaration of, like, you know, with poker, where there's a lot of brain work going on behind this game, and there's an enormous component of risk and competition and ups and downs. And so I imagine it's like that exhilarating feeling that's sometimes associated with gambling, I guess.
I wouldn't associate it with gambling. We're definitely making some planned investments. Everything is thought out. Gambling kind of makes it seem like we're playing with the bank's money, which we're not. But you're right. You do take a position, and if it's a big position, you are exhilarated a little bit, right? You kind of do feel a little thrill. But at the same time, the firm has risk mitigation put in place, right? You have all these risk mitigators. We have limits on how much we can invest. We can't have positions greater than this limit to kind of prevent you from going overboard. But sometimes you do. Sometimes you think, hey, you know, I just invested this much money in this position. It went down. Well, it can't go down anymore. It should go up. So I'm going to invest more. And then it goes down further, and the bank doesn't want you to fall into that trap, right?
Man, it's, you know, one thing I love about people who have this skill set is, you know, for me, I look at the world and I just see all of this randomness. And a lot of people who do this work, you know, they're like the king or queen of the cocktail party. They know so much about what's going on in the world. But not just that, they see how pieces fit together. And you gave that great analogy with the presidential election and foreign currency. And I imagine over time, it's like you see the matrix. Like, you start to see all the different pieces and how things that seem so distant really influence each other. And I think that's such an incredible skill set to have, to take all of this information and start to have that insight on what influences what.
So I think that's one of the reasons why this job intrigues me. I love to learn. And I do, the people that I talk to every day, these guys are really smart. These guys and girls are, you know, they've spent years here. They're learning so much every day that when you talk to them, you're just blown away by how they see the world. There's another good book out there. It's called The Black Swan by, I believe it's Nassim Taleb, that kind of talks about things like that, how you develop an understanding of macro things through learning and experience.
That's great. That's great. And, you know, one thing I was curious to learn about was career progression. And so you're right now an analyst, and I'm just wondering, like, what's the broad career path? And I actually asked this having no concept, but like, coming from a consulting background, I knew that you would start out as a consultant for 2 years and then become an engagement manager for maybe 3 years and then maybe a partner. And I'm wondering what is it, an average or a typical career path look like for someone in trading?
So I think it's very similar to consulting, and like the military, there's definitely a rank structure. You do analyst normally for about 3 years, become an associate, probably another 2-3 years there. Then you become a VP, spend a couple years there. Once you once they think that you could run, you know, kind of have your own trading book and run your own book, get promoted to director, and then if you do exceptionally well and you could, you know, they tap you to lead your own desk, then you'd be promoted to managing director. And that's really like the top of the rank structure. And then within, once you're an MD, which is managing director, you could move up within the bank, kind of taking, you know, you could run the entire securities division of the bank. You could become the chief financial officer, or the CEO. You know, the sky's the limit. But outside of the bank, you also, I guess this is one of the reasons why I wanted to go into finance as well, was there are endless opportunities. I mean, you can go on the buy side, you can go work for an asset management firm, you can go work for a hedge fund, you could go work for a corporate treasury office, right? Major companies like Microsoft and Apple, they also invest money, and they also have their own little trading unit. So many opportunities outside of trading on the sell side.
And you know, at the start, you had kind of mentioned, I wanted to just circle back and close the loop on one of the things you had mentioned, which was trading versus more of like an investment banking career. And how would you see those two differing, or how would you explain the difference between someone who focuses on trading versus an investment banker?
So mine are not the other type of investment banker. Their job is more project-driven, right? If they have a lot of projects, they're going to be super busy. If they are light on projects, they're going to be less busy. But an investment banker in that regard, they, you know, a major company will come up to them, or any company will come up to them and say, hey, I need to raise money to do this project, or I want to make this investment. So then the investment banker will be like, okay, we're going to figure out how you could raise this money. They'll value the company. They'll say, okay, well, we think that you could raise, you know, $X hundred million in bonds, and then in X years you have to pay back these bonds. Or let's say that there's what's called an initial public offering, that it's a private company and they want to go public, meaning that they would become a publicly traded stock. Then the investment bankers will value the company and kind of say, okay, well, we think you should sell this many shares in the stock market, and you should open your stock at X price. So they set what's called the top price.
You know what, I'm in comparison to that, one of the things I'm appreciating about what it seems like your life is like as a trader is what I would call predictable unpredictability, which is you've got your hours when the market is open, when it's just, you know, it's intense and it's all in, and it's just completely, you know, from my view, it seems crazy and just frenetic. And then the market closes and everything's predictable. Like, you have a stable life after work, you have a stable life on the weekend. Whereas, you know, a lot of friends that do investment banking, because it's project driven, it is kind of like it seems different, where it's like this 24/7 thing for several weeks or months, and then they get a little bit of a break and a reprieve, and then it's back into the fire. And it's just interesting, yep. You know, from an outside perspective, at least, the what seems like a pretty extreme difference in lifestyles between those two.
Yeah, the investment bankers, I think their job is very interesting, but like you said, the hours could be very crazy. I mean, I have a couple friends that are investment bankers, and they'll go in to work at 8 or 9 in the morning. They start a little bit later than we do, but they don't get out till 3 or 4 in the morning, and then they rinse and repeat, and they'll do that 7 days a week for however many weeks is necessary to finish that project. So like you said, it can be very, very exhausting.
And you had also mentioned as part of your day this whole chat concept, and I'm just wondering, is that, I mean, are people, they're like messaging you and saying, I want to buy this at this price, you know, will you do that? LOL, JK. I mean, what sort of exchange is happening in that chat process?
So the LOL, JK, that is very true too.
no way. I just threw that out as a joke. All right. That's interesting.
We utilize a lot of programs. There's a bunch of service providers out there that you could sell through. And basically what you do is you post, we'll, as a bank, we'll post our prices up. We'll say, hey, we'll buy at this and we'll sell at this. And then someone could be like, hey, you know, I don't want to buy it at that price, but I will offer you this price. But will you can I buy from you at this price? And then we'll think about it. We're like, oh, okay, we'll take it. We'll reply back, sure. Oh, you don't say sure, you say done. You say done, and then deal's done. You kind of just book the ticket, send them the trade confirmation, and we're done. But a lot of it, most people tend to use the same providers. In this case, we use Bloomberg. Most investors use Bloomberg, and there's a thing called Bloomberg Chat, and that's where everyone communicates through. Most of the deals are done via Bloomberg Chat. It's crazy.
And so, you know, for people like me that associate the Hollywood view of people shouting and buy and sell, I mean, that's largely a relic of the past now, and it's much more sophisticated than my 1980s movie view of this.
It's a little bit more sophisticated, but there is still a lot of shouting across the room. You have a salesman and you have a trader. Those are kind of two positions on the trading floor. The salesmen, they have their clients out there, and they're trying to, the client will tell them, hey, I want X many of this security. Can you get it for me? So then the salesmen will put the person on hold, and they should know who the trader is that has that security, and they'll start yelling out, hey, can I get, you know, 20 million of that? Yes, sold. Perfect. Pick up the phone again. Done. So when it's internal, the communication tends to be more verbal, but when it's external, we do it via chat or the phone. But in general, only the salesmen tend to use the phone more than the traders. Everyone else tends to do traders tend to do chat. Mm.
And what is the team environment like? Because I always think of, you know, a lot of people coming from the military, they're used to having a very tight-knit team or some team component to their job. I'm wondering, you kind of talk through in the morning when you get together with your group, but throughout the day, is this... I'm picturing this as kind of very individualistic work for the most part, with kind of check-ins periodically with the team. But I wanted to check, like, what is the team component like?
So it depends. Most traders that have their own book, their role is more individualistic, right? They're trying to buy and sell for their book and for their positions. I happen to do credit derivative swap trading, which is more of a desk role. A desk meaning there are multiple traders that trade for the same book. So one of the reasons why I wanted to do credit derivative swap trading, or CDS trading, was because of the guys that are on that desk. It's four of us, small group, really smart guys, and I hit it off when I met them. During the veteran internship, I kind of rotated through a lot of desks, and this was the desk that, you know, their culture and their dynamic, their working together resonated with me. And so the team aspect of it was incentive.
That's great. And you had mentioned that Wells Fargo has a veterans internship program. I'd love to learn more about that and what that's like and what it's been like to be a part of that.
So a lot of major banks have a veteran internship program. I mean, Goldman, JP Morgan, they all have their own. Wells Fargo started their veteran internship program this summer, mirroring that of the other firms because it wanted to recruit more veterans into the firm. It's a two-month program. It's an internship over the summer. It starts, I think, in April, and it goes till June. And you kind of rotate around different desks on the trading floor. And then at the end, hopefully one of those desks makes you an offer for a full-time position.
That's great. I mean, it sounds... Go ahead.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. That's only for the trading side. There's also there's an investment banking side. So you'll be doing the investment banking, the project-based one. And then you'll also be doing... There's also an operations side to it. Those are currently the three positions that we offer through the veteran internship program at Wells Fargo.
That's great. I mean, I love programs like that because I feel like so much about finding the right fit for a job is experimentation and getting some, at least for me, I'm so hands-on. I need kind of the day-to-day experience for a couple weeks to figure out if it's something I would enjoy doing longer. And it sounds like what this does is it allows you in a very condensed period of time to rapidly go through an organization and get that fine-tuning for not just the job and the work, but the people that you'd be working with and in the environment and just all the little intangibles that affect your day-to-day life. And so it sounds like a really cool program for people to check out to see, you know, to get that broad exposure in a very short amount of time.
I think internships in general are a very good opportunity for you to learn. I was coming into this program almost done with my MBA from a very good school, and it was nothing like I envisioned. It was surprisingly, I think I honestly think I learned a lot more about trading doing the internship than what I learned in the MBA program. Just because an MBA tends to be more broad, the broad education, whereas trading is, like I said, very specific. So I think without the internship program, I would not have made a very good decision.
Man, one last question I'd ask is, looking back on your time at Wells Fargo or maybe even while at business school as well, how do you think that your experience in the military puts you ahead of your peers? And in what ways did you feel behind your peers and like you needed to work to catch up?
I think for the most part, I was ahead of my peers through education and leadership. I think you're much more mature and you've seen things, you've done things that they cannot even fathom. At the same time, they have experience that you don't have, and you need to leverage that and be able to learn from them at the same time.
Well, this is great. I know we only have a couple more minutes left, but I'm wondering for someone listening right now who's on active duty and thinking of transitioning out of the military in, let's say, the next 2 years, what are some things you would recommend that they do right now to start preparing for that transition?
Start reading books, start doing your research, reach out to vets in the industry that you're trying to get into. Vets in general will most likely return your email or your call and try to help you out. I think being a veteran kind of gets your foot in the door, and then the way you carry yourself through those phone calls or those follow-on emails kind of determines whether you get to walk through that door or not. But definitely do your research before you reach out to anyone, kind of have an understanding of what's going on, and then ask very intelligent questions. That's very important.
I think that's great. Last question I'd ask is more of a catch-all, because I think that you've honestly, I knew very little about a trading position before our call, and I think you did an exceptional job of just explaining what that's like and just really painting a vivid picture of that. I'm sure you talk to a lot of veterans. I know you've been very involved in giving back to the veteran community. I'd love to just open it up if there's anything I didn't ask about or anything that you think would be relevant to people listening. What else would you want them to know about life in general, civilian life, finance, business school, anything that I didn't cover that you would like to really share with people?
So a few things. I think the first thing that comes to mind is, I read resumes for the admissions committee at Booth and for the veteran recruitment process here at Wells Fargo. And one of the things I've noticed is that veterans have a tough time of translating what they do in the military into civilian speak. For example, I had a resume on my desk this morning asking me to translate a Navy SEAL's job to civilian terms because no one understood what his resume was saying. And this is a great candidate. And without me being there to be able to translate it, you probably may not have a chance at Wells Fargo. So do yourself a favor and spend hours, days on your resume and try to translate it into civilian terms. If you were a detailer in the Navy, instead of using the word detailer, say you're a personnel management officer or something like that, right? figure out how you can translate that into civilian terms. Another thing, you know, like I said, being a veteran is going to probably get you looked at and get you in the door, or get your foot in the door. But you got to perform once you get through that door. Being a veteran is not going to carry you through the job. You actually have to go out there, do your best, knock it out of the ballpark, and move up. You know, don't be. One of the things I think that veterans tend to struggle with is arrogance. We tend to feel like we deserve a little bit more respect. I mean, I'm 30 years old doing in a position that tends to be for 22-year-olds. I can't be arrogant about it. I have to accept it, do the job, and hope that one day I'll move on up. Right? What else? Don't be surprised about getting a pay cut. When you get out of the military, you might actually see a pay cut. Know that it's for the short term, and if you keep that long range view, it shouldn't be an issue. And plan ahead. Honestly, like I said, I made my transition in 5 months. That was probably too close. You should be thinking about it a year out. I think that's all I got.
Man, this is great, and it's funny. I mean, I think that's good advice on planning ahead, and you know, if you did have a late start on it, you definitely made up for it in hard work and travel and just getting a ton of experience in an extremely short amount of time. And so, yeah, really appreciate your sharing your perspective on this, Vic. I know when Noel had made the introduction, he was singing your praises as one of his favorite junior officers and how successful you were on the boat. And it's clear that success is translated from the Cheyenne into the civilian world. And I appreciate your sharing your lessons learned with the audience here.
Thank you so much, Justin. If there's any veteran out there that's listening and they want to reach out to me, they can find me on LinkedIn. Victor Perez, and I'll be more than happy to help out anyone that reaches out.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Vic. I really appreciate it.
Take care, Justin. Have a good one.
You too.
Surface.
All right, gang, that's all for today. A couple quick admin items at beyondtheuniform.io. You will find more resources like data, charts, graphs, and a ton of interviews in the podcast section. If you have feedback, if you have ideas on how to make the show better and how to provide more resources to veterans, please drop me a line at beyondtheuniform.io/ping. Lastly, not endorsed by service to school at all, but it's an organization I've really come to respect based on these interviews. If you are on active duty, or if you're a veteran in general and thinking about going to school, that's grad school, undergrad, med school, law school, any type of academic institution, I definitely recommend you check out Service to School. They provide free resources to veterans. They pair you with someone with a similar background who can guide you through the process of everything you need to know to get into the school that's best for you. That's interview prep, resume help, all sorts of things. So check them out at servicetoschool.org. Have a great rest of the week and looking forward to talking to you soon.